Hello. In this session, we are going to talk about corporate entrepreneurship. Well, the corporate entrepreneurship is kind of special types of entrepreneurship. So why we care for the corporate entrepreneurship? Okay, in order to understand the corporate entrepreneurship, you know, we need to understand the history and philosophical reason behind the corporate entrepreneurship. Okay, let's go through the philosophical and historical, the reasoning, you know, why we care for the corporate entrepreneurship. Are you ready? Okay, let's begin. Well, do you remember this guy? You know, he is a very famous economist. His name is Schumpeter, right? And he published one of the very famous book in 1934 in English. Okay, the book is The Theory of Economic Development. In his book, you know, he emphasized entrepreneurs as a primary engine of the innovation. Okay, he said that entrepreneurs drive economic development by introducing innovations. So do you remember five different types of innovation? For example, new product or new market or new organization, new materials, new method of production, something like that, right? So the basically, according to him, key to success of the economic development is the entrepreneurial innovation. Okay? So no argument. And everybody was impressed with his idea. Then what happened? Later, you know, 10 years later, you know, he published another book, which is Capitalism, Socialism, and Democracy. Okay, in his book, he argued that large companies surpass entrepreneurs in innovation capacity. Yes, of course, because large companies have the resources and monies and manpowers and the others. Okay, so he said that corporations internalize R&D, financing, and management. So the companies, big companies, exploit economies of scale. So basically, he said that, you know, the big company generated innovation, not entrepreneur company. Wow, it's totally opposite. You know what I mean? 10 years ago, he emphasized on the entrepreneur's role. But 10 years later, he changed his mind. Okay, well, that's from my study. You know, I'm kind of wrong, right? You know, according to my recent research, I found that, you know, big corporations produce more the innovations. Okay, like this. You know, there's a two phases of his argument. So phase one, early phase, he argued that entrepreneurs drive innovation. Okay. And then 10 years later, phase two, he said that, no, wait a minute. Okay. Large companies dominate innovation because they have money, they have knowledge, they have manpower, they have resources, something like that. So we cannot, you know, I think it's a small company cannot compete with the large company. Okay, look at this picture. In the middle, this guy is Lee Jae-yong. He is a president or CEO of Samsung Electronics. And the left person, you know, he is a former president, President Moon Jae-in. And Lee Jae-yong introduced a new building to President Moon Jae-in. And then he said that, okay, look at this building. You know, this building cost three times more than the Incheon Airport. Oh my God, you know, Samsung Electronics invested, you know, tons of money to build up kind of a new, the semiconductor building, semiconductor factory. Okay, how much? Three times expensive than Incheon Airport. You see, Incheon Airport is a really big airport, you know, and it's a kind of a world-class airport, but, you know, the Samsung Electronics spent three times more expensive than Incheon Airport. Okay, another one. This is the CEO of Hyundai Car Group, right? Hyundai Motors. And Hyundai Motors Group announced to invest $16 billion in Korea's next generation mobilities. Oh my God, where the money come from? Anyways, you know, the Hyundai Motor Groups invest $16 billion to do something. How can we compete with this, you know, the big corporation? If you are startup owners, if you are, you know, the future startup founders, can you compete with them? And who produce, you know, innovations? You or Hyundai Motor Group or Samsung Electronics? Yes, of course, Samsung Electronics or Hyundai Motor Group will generate much more innovation than you. Okay, then just a small and no-name entrepreneurial company. What do you think? Let's go back to the Schumpeter's change in his hypothesis. His changes sparked the decade of debate. Then later, you know, we can expand our perspective. So we got kind of more nuanced realities. What it is, you know, large company dominate innovation, but these innovations are incremental innovation. Okay. On the other hand, you know, small company excel in radical innovation. Okay. So basically there are two different types of innovation. Okay. So in most case, large company dominate innovation, but their innovations are based on, you know, incremental innovation. But, you know, sometimes small company generate innovations. But these innovations are kind of a radical innovation. Radical innovation means a little bit game-changing innovation. Okay, you know what I mean? So it looks like this. You know, there is a David and Goliath. You know the David and Goliath, you know, if you are Christian and you know the story. But although I'm not a Christian, but I knew the story, right? Because it's a pretty the famous story. Anyway, so Goliath, who is a giant, and then David, who is a boy, and then, you know, and then who won the game? Yes, you know, the David won the game because David has a kind of a unique weapon, which is a rolling stone, okay? And then with this stone, you know, David successfully killed Goliath. So what do you think? You know, Goliath represents some kind of big companies, and big companies that dominated, you know, innovation. But these innovations are kind of incremental innovations. But at the same time, you know, David is less likely to innovate the situation. But if he generates innovation, these types of innovation would be radical innovation. It's very dangerous and changes the game. You know what I mean? So this is kind of relationship between big company and small and entrepreneurial company. Then why do we care for, you know, this relationship? Okay, think about it. This is a traditional watches. Traditional watches run by kind of a spring, okay? And then in 1969, what happened? One of the Japanese company invented new types of the watches. Okay, this watch is called, you know, the quartz watches. Okay, quartz watches is operated by kind of a battery. Okay, inside watches, there is a battery. Okay, it's a kind of a electronic watches. Then what happened? You know, of course, this quartz watches cost down. Okay, it's very cheap. And mechanical watches, expensive. Then what happened? Switzerland watch industry collapsed dramatically. Okay, later on, we call it a quartz crisis. You know, in Switzerland, employment of the watchmaking fell from 90,000 people to 28,000 people. And also, you know, Switzerland global watch production shares fell from 95% to 15%. Think about it, right? 80% were gone. 80% were gone. So U.S. brand like Hamilton and Waltham collapsed. Okay, so that's why we should care for the relationship between big company and small company, and we should keep eye on the behaviors of small company or entrepreneurial innovation. Why? Because this entrepreneurial innovation will be dangerous, and they will change the game. Okay, Hollywood studio. It's a movie, okay? And also there is a TV, okay, TV. Then what happened? you know, once the TV was introduced in the market, then, you know, TV's adoption is so fast. Okay, so fast. Then later what happened? You know, movie industry were in trouble. Okay, so box office receipt decreased by 45%. Think about it. Half gone. Half percent, you know, 50% gone because of the TV, right? So if there's a new innovation, I mean radical innovation, then the existing company suffer from those kind of radical innovation. I will give you another example. You know, this is a Kodak. Kodak is originally a number one player in the film industry. Okay, Kodak, number one filmmaker in the world. But this Kodak filed for bankruptcy in 2012. And look at this picture. You know, the Kodak announced the bankruptcy and the other, you know, the reporter take a picture and then look at this camera. These all the camera made in Japan. Okay, the first one, Fuji, Sony, and I think it's the Nikon, Canon, and the last one is Samsung. Okay, it's a Korean company. Anyway, these all camera is not film camera. It is a digital camera, right? So why Kodak failed? Because of the digital camera technology. But ironically, who invented the digital camera technology? You know that? Kodak invented the digital camera technology. But the problem was, you know, Kodak executives, you know, try to keep secret about this invention. Why? Because they felt fear of the cannibalization. Okay. So at that time, so that's why they didn't use the film, you know, digital camera technology, and they tried to keep the secret. Then what happened? Kodak licensed some of its digital camera technologies to Japanese company. And then Japanese company took the technology, then, you know, make a new types of camera, which is a digital camera. So for the first time, Sony released the, you know, Mavica, which is the first commercial digital camera in 1981. After then, what happened? You know, Kodak went to bankruptcy. Look at this. This is the Mavica for the, you know, first digital camera in the world in 1981. Okay, instead of using analog film, you know, this camera used some, I don't know, it's a thumb drive. You know, probably you don't know what it is. That is the floppy disk. It's very similar to the thumb drive, okay, right now. You know, then this camera, this digital camera, you know, made Kodak disappeared. Okay. And this is, you know, there's another example. You know, do you remember the relationship between Netflix and Blockbuster, right? Netflix started with the DVD by mail service in 1998. At that time, the Blockbuster has more than 6,000 stores all over the world. Then what happened? Netflix introduced a streaming service in 2007, and in 2009, Netflix stream service, you know, overtook DVD shipment. Then later what happened? You know, nobody used Blockbuster store. So the Blockbuster went bankruptcy, right? So that's why we should care for the, you know, startups innovation, and we should keep eye on the startups innovation. Why? Because their innovation sometimes very dangerous. Okay, very dangerous. You know, he is Dr. Christensen. Although he passed away, he left very, very insightful idea. You know, he said that successful companies that did everything right still lose their market leadership if they ignore the disrupted innovation. Okay. Disrupted innovation from mostly startup or from mostly small company, okay? So if the big company ignore those kind of innovation, that could be dangerous. Okay, his idea is disruptive innovation arrives in the form of very minor threat. So we ignore them, okay? It is easy for us to ignore this minor threat. And according to him, there are two different types of disruptor. The first disruptor take low-end market of existing, you know, industry. Or second disruptor, you know, create kind of entirely new market. And then try to steal the consumers, you know, away from the existing companies. Okay? Again, they create a new market and steal the consumers away from the existing companies. Okay. So there are two different types of the disruptors. The first disruptor we say low-end disruptors. Again, this low-end disruptor arrived in the market at the bottom. Okay, I want to give you an example. There are two different types of the steel making the company. The first company is, we say, it is integrated mill. Okay, this, you know, this company is based on the traditional method of steel making. You know, basically, you know, this company, to boil down the soil, okay, basically boil down the soil and put additional stuff such as coal and iron ore. Then they got the steel. Okay, we say it is integrated mill. Another types of steel making is mini mill, okay, on the right side. Instead of boiling down the soil, you know, this mini mill uses electricity. And basically they melt down the you know, existing steel. So they reuse the existing steel. This is a kind of a recycling, okay? So it's a traditional method. It's a second one is alternative method. And of course, you know, traditional method produced high quality steel. On the other hand, you know, alternative method produced, you know, low quality steel. Okay, what is the good thing about the mini mill? Okay, so mini mill can, you know, cost down, okay, can cost down the steel production. Okay, so this steel is 20% low cost. So now you understand the relationship, right? Okay, there are two different types of steel making. First one integrated, the second one is a mini mill. Okay, in order to understand these two companies' relationship very well, and you need to understand the industry itself. Okay, inside the steel making industry, there are kind of four different types of the product exist. The first one is rebar. We say it's rebar. Rebar, you probably cannot see the rebar because rebar can be used for the building, building your house. Okay. So inside the building, there are a lot of rebars. Okay. And then second one is angle iron. And third one is structural steel. And the last one is panel steel. Panel steel is pretty thin. And, you know, we can use this panel steel for making refrigerator or car or the others. Okay. Can something. So it is a kind of a daily use steel, right? Okay, so the quality of the steel, rebar has a low quality and panel steel has a high quality. So we say panel steel is the high-end product and rebar is a low-end product. Okay. Of course, gross margin, is different. Rebar's gross margin is just 7.7% and angle iron 12% and panel steel has the bigger gross margin. Okay, which is 25 to 30%. So of course, you know, the existing, you know, steel makers just focused on production of the panel steel. They want to produce more panel steel, okay, rather than rebar, because rebar gross margin is much lower than panel steel. So this is a production ratio. It's just 4%, 8%, and 55%. Okay, so the existing integrated mill just focused on panel steel production. Then later what happened? You know, mini mill arrived in the bottom of the market, bottom of the industry, which is the rebar market. They just focused on rebar market, okay? And then, of course, the quality of the steel, the mini mill produced, is kind of low. So they just entered the rebar market with much lower prices. How much? 20% discounted prices. Okay, then the integrated mill were really happy about, you know, to exit the rebar market. Why? Because the rebar market, they don't care about the rebar market. They don't have any incentive to protect this rebar market. And just integrated mill, just let the mini mill to do whatever they want in the rebar market. We gave up rebar market. Instead, we will produce more high quality product. Okay. So they gave up rebar market. They just focus on angle iron or structural steel and panel steel. Then later what happened? You know, mini mill make a lot of money from the rebar market, and they save the money, and they upgrade their quality of the production, and they produce the high quality product, and they enter the angle iron market. Then enter the angle iron market. Then integrated mill decide to give up angle iron market too. Then they decided to focus more on structural steel and panel steel because they expect, you know, better, you know, gross margin. Then what happened? You know, mini mill save the money, make a lot of money, save the money, and upgrade their quality and enter the another market, like angle iron market, structural steel market, and, you know, panel steel market. So they entered the panel steel market too. Later what happened? The production, you know, mini-mill production is increased and integrated mill production is decreased. So there, the market share is opposite. Okay? Look at this graph. And there is another types of disruptor. We say it is a creative disruptor. Do you remember the creative disruptor? Okay, these types of disruptor create new market that never exists, then later attempt to steal the consumers away from the existing company. I want to give you an example. Okay, there is a radio. This is a traditional radio. Okay, traditional radio used the vacuum tube. Vacuum tube is pretty thick, so that's why, you know, traditional radio, you know, is heavy and big, right? The consumers perceive this traditional radio as the furniture. Okay, then there's what happened. You know, one of the Japanese company took the technology of the transistor, okay, transistor technology, and tried to make a portable radio. This is a transistor radio. Then what happened? You know, in 1950s, 1960s, the market for the transistor radio exploded. Okay, and there are 12 million transistor radios in use by 1959. And what about the response from the existing radio company? You know, existing radio company just ignore the transistor radio because the sound quality of the transistor radio is really terrible. So that's why, you know, established, you know, the existing radio company just focus on sound. Then later what happened? You know, transistor radio, you know, didn't fight with existing radio companies in the home market. Instead, transistor radio shifted the market from the home radio market to the outdoor market. Okay, so this radio targets the new market first. Okay, so for example, outdoor. Okay, such as, you know, vacation or ocean or summer or something like that. Okay, so they target to the different market. Then what happened? You know, everybody used the transistor radio and the existing radio company collapsed. Okay, this is why we care for the startups innovations.